authority on the behemoth. Ashford was willing to kill them all to get his own way. Anna felt a growing rage and was glad that no one had thought to give her a gun. "Are we still broadcasting?" she yelled at Amos over the gunfire.
"Dunno, Red. Monica's in the radio room."
Anna pulled herself across the wall to the closet where they'd placed their broadcasting gear. The door was ajar, and she could see Monica floating inside, checking the equipment. The space wasn't large enough for both of them, so Anna just pushed the door open a little farther and said, "Are we still broadcasting? Can we get back on the air?" Monica gave a humorless laugh, but didn't turn around.
"I thought you were dead."
"No, but Okshu is. I think she broke her neck. I'll take the camera if you need me to. Where's Clip?"
"Clip was helping Amos, and he was shot in the hip. He's bleeding out in a side office. Tilly is helping him." Anna pushed her way into the small room and put a hand on Monica's shoulder.
"We have to get back on the air. We have to keep up the broadcast, or this is all for nothing. Tell me what to do."
Monica laughed again, then turned around and swatted Anna's hand off her arm.
"What do you think is happening here? Ashford has men outside trying to break in and kill us. Bull and his people have lost the engine room, and Juarez says Bull's been killed. Who knows how many people he..."
Anna planted her feet against the door jamb, grabbed Monica by the shoulders, and slammed the reporter up against the wall.
"Does the broadcasting equipment still work?"
She was amazed at how steady her voice sounded.
"It got banged around some, but does it work?"
"Yes," Monica said. It came out as a frightened squeak.
"Get me on the channel the assault team was using and give me a headset," Anna said, then let go of Monica's shoulders.
Monica did as she was asked, moving quickly and only occasionally giving her a frightened look.
"I've become frightening," Anna thought,
tasting the idea and finding it less unpleasant than she'd expect. These were frightening times.
"Fuck!"
Amos yelled from the other room. When Anna looked out, she saw one of the young Martian officers floating in the middle of the room, spraying small globes of red blood into the air around him. Her friend Chris launched across the room by pushing off with his one good leg and grabbed the injured man with his one arm, then pulled him into cover.
"We're running out of time," Anna said to Monica. "Work faster."
Monica's reply was to hand her a headset with a microphone.
"Hello. This is Anna Volovodov at Radio Free Slow Zone. Is anyone left on this channel?"
Someone replied, but they were impossible to hear over the nearby gunfire. Anna turned the volume up to the maximum and said,
"Repeat that, please."
"We're here," James Holden said at deafening levels.
"How many are left, and what's the situation?"
"Well," Holden said, then paused and grunted as though exerting himself for several seconds.
He sounded out of breath when he continued.
"We're holed up in the port elevator shaft just outside the command deck airlock. There are three of us at this position. Bull and the remaining Marines are fighting the counter-assault team at a position further down the shaft. I have no idea how that's going. We've run out of room to retreat, so unless someone decides to open the hatch and let us onto the bridge, we're sort of out of options."
The last part of his sentence was almost drowned out by a massive wave of incoming gunfire in her office. Amos and his group were hunkered down, leaning against the reinforced armor they'd attached to the walls. The reports of the shots and the sound of bullets hitting metal was deafening. When the fire lessened, a pair of men in behemoth security armor rushed the room, spraying automatic weapons fire as they came. Two of Amos's team were hit, and more globes of red flew into the air. Amos grabbed the second man through the door and yanked him up off his magnetic hold to the floor, then threw him at his partner. They tumbled off across the room together, and then Amos fired a long burst from his weapon into both as they spun. The air was filled with so many floating red orbs of various sizes that it became difficult to see. The rest of Amos's team opened fire. and whatever attack Ashford's people had launched was apparently driven back, as no more soldiers charged through the door.
"Is there anything we can do?"
Anna yelled at Holden.
"Sounds to me like you're in some shit there yourself, Preacher," Holden replied. His voice was weary, sad. "Unless you've got the bridge access controls nearby, I'd say you should concentrate on your own problems."
More fire came through the offices, but it was sporadic. Amos had driven off their big attack, and now they were taking petulant potshots. Monica was staring at her, waiting for her to issue another order. Somehow, she'd become the person in charge.
"Set me to broadcast on the Radio Free Slow Zone feed," Anna said. In the end, talking was all she had to offer.
Monica nodded at her and pointed a small camera at her face.
"This is Anna Volovodov, broadcasting from the offices of Radio Free Slow Zone to anyone on the behemoth that's still listening. We've failed to hold engineering, so our plan to shut down the reactor and get everyone back home is failing as well. We have people trapped on the external elevator shaft, and they can't get onto the bridge. So please, if anyone listening to this can help, we need you. Everyone on this flotilla needs you. The people dying right outside your door need you. Most of all, the people we left behind on Earth and Mars and the belt need you. If the captain does what he's planning, if he fires the laser at the ring, everyone back home will die too. Please, if you can hear me, help us."
She stopped, and Monica put down the camera.
"Think that will work?" Monica asked.
Anna was about to say no when the Walcom panel buzzed at her. A voice said,
"How do you know that?"
A young voice, female, sad. "Clarissa. What you said about destroying Earth if we attack the ring. How do you know that?"
"Clarissa," Anna said, "where are you?"
"I'm here, on the bridge. I'm in the security station. I was watching your broadcast.
Can you open the door and let our people in?"
"Yes."
"Will you do that?"
"How?"
Clarissa repeated, her tone not changing at all.
"Do you know what you said?"
A man, generally regarded as the instigator of two solar system-wide wars, got all this information from a protomolecule-created ghost that no one else can see. It wasn't a particularly compelling argument. James Holden got it while he was on the station.
"So he told you that this would happen,"
Clarissa said, her tone doubtful.
"Yes. So, how do you know?"
"I don't, Claire,"
Anna said, appropriating Tilly's pet name to try and create a connection.
"I don't know. But Holden believes it's true, and the consequences, if he's right, are too extreme to risk. So, I'm taking it on faith."
There was a long moment of silence. Then a male voice said,
"Clarissa, who are you talking to in here?"
It took Anna a moment to recognize it as Hector Cortez. She'd known he was on the bridge with Ashford, but somehow the reminder that he'd sided with the two men who killed Bull was too much. She had to restrain herself from cursing at him. "Anna wants me to open the elevator airlock and let the other side into the bridge. She wants me to help stop Ashford from destroying the ring. She says it will kill everyone on Earth if we do."
"Don't listen to her," Cortez said. "She's just afraid."
"Afraid?" Anna yelled. "Do you hear those sounds, Hector? That's gunfire. Bullets are flying by even as we speak. You're locked away safe and snug on the command deck planning to destroy something you don't understand, while I am risking gunshot wounds to stop you. Who's afraid here?"
"You're afraid to make the necessary sacrifices to protect the people we've left behind." You're only thinking of yourself, he yelled back.
Anna heard the sound of a door closing in the background. Someone had shut the door to the security station to keep the argument from being overheard. If it was Clarissa, that was a good sign.
Clarissa, Anna said, keeping her voice as calm as she could with the ongoing sounds of a gunfight behind her.
Claire, the people waiting outside the airlock door are going to be killed if you don't open it. They are trapped there. People are coming to kill them.
Don't change the subject, Cortez started.
It's Holden and Naomi out there, Anna continued, ignoring him. And Bull is there too. Ashford will have them all killed.
They wouldn't be in danger if they hadn't attacked Ashford's rightful command, Cortez said.
That's three people who all made the choice to give you a second chance, Anna said. Bull chose to protect you from the UN fleet's vengeance when he had no reason to. When I asked her to, Naomi forgave you for almost killing her. Holden agreed not to hurt you in spite of the many provocations you gave him.
Those people are criminals, Cortez tried to say over the top of her, but she kept her voice level and continued.
These people, the people who forgive, who try to help others, the people who give their lives to save strangers, they're on the other side of that door, dying. I don't have to take that on faith. That's fact. That's happening right now.
Anna paused, waiting for any sign Claire was listening. There was none. Even Cortez had stopped speaking. The comm station hissed faintly, the only sign it was still on.
Those are the people I'm asking you to help, Anna said. The person I'm asking you to betray is a man who kills innocent people for expediency's sake. Forget Earth, and the ring, and everything else you'd have to take on faith. Ask yourself this. Do you want to let Ashford kill Holden and Naomi? No faith. Just that simple question, Claire. Can you let them die? What choice did they make when the same question was asked of them about you?
Anna knew she was rambling, knew she was repeating herself, but she had to force herself to stop speaking anyway. She wasn't used to trying to save a person's soul without being able to see them, to measure the effect her words were having by their reaction. She kept trying to fill that empty space with more talking.
I don't like the idea of those people being killed any more than you do, Cortez said. He sounded sad, but committed to his position. But there is the necessity for sacrifice. To sacrifice is literally to be made sacred.
Seriously? Anna gave a humorless laugh. We're going to do dueling etymology.
What we are facing here is more than humanity is ready for, Cortez said.
You don't get to decide that, Hank, Anna said, stabbing at the radio as if it were the man. Think about the people you're killing. Look at who you're working with, and tell me that in clear conscience you know you're doing the right thing.
Argument by association, Cortez said. Really? God's tools have always been flawed. We are a fallen people. But that we have the strength of will to do what we must, even in the face of mortal punishment, is what makes us moral beings. And you, of all people.
The feed went silent for a moment.
Cortez, Anna said.
But when Cortez's voice came, he wasn't speaking to her.
Clarissa, what are you doing?
Clarissa sounded calm, almost half asleep.
I opened the doors.
Chapter 50. Holden. Naomi had taken an access panel off the wall next to the command deck airlock. She'd crawled halfway inside, and only her belly and legs were visible.
Holden had planted his mag boots next to the airlock's outer door and was awaiting instructions from her. Occasionally, she'd ask him to try opening the door again, but every attempt so far had failed. Corin floated next to him, watching down the elevator shaft through her gun sights. They'd seen a quick flash of light down there a few minutes back that had set the bulkheads to vibrating. Something violent and explosive had happened. Holden, having now moved on to his second last stand of the day, had come to view the whole thing with a weary sense of humor. As far as places to die went, the small platform between the elevator shaft and the airlock was about as good as any other. It was a niche in the wall of the shaft, about 10 feet on a side. The floor, ceiling, and bulkheads were all the same ceramic steel of the ship's outer hull. The back wall was the airlock door. The front was empty space where the elevator would normally sit. At the very least, when Ashford's people came swarming up the shaft at them, the floor of the niche would offer some cover. Naomi scooted sideways a bit and kicked one leg. Holden could hear her over the radio as she grunted with the effort of grabbing something just out of reach. "Gotcha," she said in triumph. "Okay, try it now." Holden hit the button to open the outer airlock doors. Nothing happened. "Are you trying it?" Naomi asked. He hit the button 2 more times. "Yeah, nothing." "Damn it! I could have sworn..." Corin shifted enough to give him a sardonic look, but said nothing. The truth was, Holden was out of emotional gas. He'd gone through his existential moment of truth back when he thought he was making a last stand at the elevator to buy Naomi time. Then he'd been given a reprieve when the attackers chose another path, but Naomi had been put in the firing line, which was actually worse. And then she'd shown up a few minutes ago, saying Bull had sent her on ahead to get the door open while he acted as rear guard. Every plan they'd made had failed spectacularly, with more casualties piling up at every step. And now they were at yet another last stand, with a locked door behind them, and Ashford's goons ahead of them, and nowhere to go. It should have been terrifying, but at this point, Holden just felt sleepy. "Try it now," Naomi said. Holden jabbed the button a few times without looking at it. "Nope." "Maybe," she said and moved around, kicking her legs again. "Two incoming," Corin said, her voice harsh and buzzing over the radio. He'd never heard her voice when it wasn't on a suit radio. He wondered whether it would have that same quality naturally. He walked over to the edge of the platform and looked down, magnetic boots having tricked his brain into thinking there was an up and down again. Looking through his gun sight's magnification, he saw 2 of the Martian Marines hurtling up the shaft as fast as their cheap environment suits would let them. He didn't recognize them yet. Bull wasn't with them. "Try it now," Naomi said. "Busy," Holden replied, scanning the space behind the Marines for pursuers. He didn't see any. Naomi climbed out of her access panel and floated over next to him to see what was going on. The Marines shot up the shaft toward them at high speed, flipped at the last minute, and hit the ceiling feet first to come to a rapid stop. They pushed off and landed next to Holden, sticking to the floor with magnetic boots. Holden could see through their faceplates now and recognized the sniper, Juarez, and the dark-skinned woman whose name he'd never gotten. "We've lost the hold point," Juarez said. He clutched his long rifle in one hand and a fresh magazine in the other. He loaded the gun and said, "Last mag," to his partner. She checked her harness and said, 3. "Report," Holden said, slipping into military command mode without even meaning to. He'd been a lieutenant in the Navy. Juarez was enlisted. The training they'd received about who gave orders and who followed them in combat died hard. I took out one hostile with a headshot. I believe a second was neutralized with our remaining explosives. No intel on the other two. They may have been injured or killed by the explosion, but we can't count on that.
Bull?
Corin asked. He was holding the explosives. That second kill was his.
Bull,
Corin said again, choking up. Holden was surprised to see her eyes filling with tears.
We have to go get him.
Negative, Juarez said. The elevator has become a barrier. He's inside it. Anything we do to remove his body actively degrades our defensive position.
Fuck you,
Corin said, taking an aggressive step toward Juarez, her hands closing into fists.
We don't leave him.
Before she could take another step, Holden grabbed her by her weapon harness and yanked her off the floor, then spun around to slam her against the closest bulkhead. He heard the air go out of her in a whoosh over the radio.
Mourn later, he said, not letting her go. When we're done, then we mourn for all of them.
She grabbed his wrists in her hands, and for one heart-stopping moment, Holden thought she might fight him. He seriously questioned his ability to win a zero-G grappling match with a stocky security officer. But she just pulled his hands off her harness, then pushed herself back down to the floor.
Understood, sir, she said.
Back on watch,
Holden said, keeping his voice as gentle as possible. She walked back to the edge of the platform. Juarez watched without comment. After a respectful moment, he said,
Plan, sir?
Naomi is trying to get the door open, but without any success. Blowing the elevator may have bought you two a couple more minutes, but maybe that's all it bought you.
We'll try to make the most of them,
the other Marine said with a half-smile. Juarez chuckled and slapped her on the back.
So, this is our final defensive position, then. Good cover and field of fire. If I get lucky, maybe I can crack another mask. Cass, why don't you take that right corner? Corin can keep the left, and I'll set up here in the center. Holden can rove and back up whichever side is taking the most heat.
He paused, nodding at Holden. If you agree, sir.
I agree, Holden said. In fact, I'm giving you full tactical command of this position. I'm going to be trying to help Naomi with the door. Yell if you get in trouble.
Juarez kicked off his mags, then jumped up to plant his feet on the ceiling. He straightened out, his long rifle pointed over his head, straight down the shaft. From Holden's perspective, he looked like a particularly well-armed bat hanging from the roof.
Movement, he said almost immediately.
Shit, the Marine named Cass said.
They got through the barrier fast.
Looks like they're not quite through, but the wall is bulging like they're beating their way through it.
I have an idea, Naomi said, and walked over to the edge of the platform, then out onto the wall and over to the opposite side of the elevator shaft.
Where are you going? Holden asked.
Panel, was her only answer before she popped an access hatch off the elevator shaft bulkhead and climbed inside. It was large enough that she completely disappeared. Holden didn't think there would be anything in there that could help them get the airlock door open, but he didn't care. Naomi was hidden while she stayed in there. Ashford's people might not bother to look for her. They probably didn't have good intel on who had engaged in the assault on engineering.
Here they come, Juarez said, looking down the shaft through his telescopic sight.
Two left.
His muzzle flashed once.
Shit, no hit.
It flashed twice more. Cass started firing with her assault rifle on single fire, carefully aiming each shot. The bad guys were just under a kilometer away. Holden didn't think he'd be able to hit a stationary transport shuttle at that range, much less a rapidly moving man-sized target. But after having spent some time with Bobby Draper, Holden knew that if Cass was taking the shots, it was because she thought she had a chance to score hits. He wasn't about to argue with her. 800 meters, Juarez said, his voice no different than if he'd been giving a stranger the time. 750. He fired again. Cass fired off the last of her magazine, then replaced it in one smooth motion. She had one extra left. Holden took 3 magazines off his own bandolier and left them floating next to her left elbow. She nodded her thanks without pausing in her firing. Juarez fired twice more, then said, "Out." He continued sighting down the scope, calling out ranges for Cass. When he hit 500 meters, Corin started firing as well. It was all very brave, Holden thought. None of them were the kind of people who gave up, no matter the odds. But it was also sort of pointless. Juarez had the only gun that was even remotely a threat to troops in state-of-the-art recon armor, and he'd fired it dry and only scored 1 kill. So they'd throw a lot of bullets at the approaching enemy, because that's what people like them did, even when there was no chance. But in the end, Ashford would win. If he wasn't so emotionally drained, Holden would have been pissed. The LEDs in the elevator shaft came back on, bathing them all with white light. The 2 soldiers wearing their stolen power armor were flying up the corridor toward them. Before he'd had time to wonder why the power was back on, there was a thud that Holden could feel through his feet. A large section of the elevator bulkhead slid open. The backup elevator slowly moved out into the shaft on hydraulic arms, then locked into place on the wall-mounted tracks. Lights flashed on the elevator's control panel as its system cycled through warm-up. Then a light on the panel flashed red 3 times, and the elevator launched down the tracks at high speed. "Huh," Juarez said. The impact, when the hurtling backup elevator slammed into the stationary main elevator, shook the bulkheads hard enough to make Holden's helmet ring like a bell. "Well?" Cass said. Corin leaned out over the edge of the platform, looking down, and yelled, "Fuck you!" through the vacuum. A few seconds later, Naomi's head popped back out of the open access panel. She looked up at them and waved. Did that work? Holden found that he wasn't too drained to feel relief. "I think so. The armor is pretty tough," Juarez said. "It might be okay. But at that speed, whatever's inside it is probably a liquid now." Naomi walked across the elevator bulkhead and then stepped over and down onto their platform. "I'm not good with guns," she said in an almost apologetic voice. "No," Juarez said, waving his hands in a gesture of surrender. "You just keep doing your thing. Warn me if I'm in the way." "Doesn't solve our door problem," Naomi added, still with a tone of apology. Because he couldn't kiss her in an environment suit, Holden put an arm around her shoulder and hugged her to his side. "I'm happy with you solving the about-to-be-ripped-to-pieces problem." Corin, who turned to look at the airlock when Naomi mentioned it, said, "Open sesame," and the outer airlock door slid open. "Holy shit," Holden said. "Did you just magic that door open?" "The green cycle light was blinking," Corin replied. "Did you do that?" Holden said, turning to Naomi. "Nope." "Then we should be careful." Holden handed his rifle and his remaining magazines to Juarez, then drew his sidearm. "Juarez, when the inner door's open, you have the point." Cass nodded, and Naomi punched the cycle button. The outer door closed, and for 2 tense minutes, the air pressure equalized. Everyone other than Naomi was pointing a gun at the inner door when it finally opened. There was nothing on the other side but a short corridor that ended at another elevator, and a second hallway going left at the midway point. "That's the one that leads to the bridge," Corin said.
5 meters long, 1.5 meters or so wide. There's a hatch, but it only closes and locks in the event of emergency decomp, or if someone in the security station hits the override.
Then that's our first target, Holden said. Cass, when we go in, you break right and control the security station. Juarez, you go left and try to draw any return fire away from Cass. Korn and I will go right up the gut and try to get our hands on Ashford. If we put a gun to him, I think this ends immediately. Naomi, you stay here, but be ready to come running when we call. Taking control of the ship will be your bit.
Pretty shitty plan, LT, Juarez said with a grin.
You have a better one?
Nope, so let's get it done.
Juarez pulled the rifle to his shoulder and moved off down the corridor at a quick magnetic boot shuffle. Cass followed close behind, her hand on his back. Holden took third, with Corin bringing up the rear. Naomi waited by the elevator doors, clutching her tool case nervously. When they reached the junction, Juarez signaled the stop, then leaned around the corner. He pulled back and said,
"Looks clear to the bridge entry point. When we go, go fast. Stop for nothing. Maximum aggression wins the day here."
After a round of assents from everyone, he counted down from 3, yelled, "Go, go, go!" darted around the corner, and was immediately shot. It was so unexpected, Cass actually took a step back into Holden. Juarez screamed in pain and launched himself back into their hallway. Bullets slammed into the bulkheads and deck around him. After the long silence of vacuum in the elevator shaft, the sound of gunfire and bullet impact was disorienting, deafening. Cass and Holden grabbed Juarez by his arms and pulled him around the corner out of the gunfire. With Cass covering the intersection, Holden checked Juarez over for injuries. He had gunshot wounds in his hip, upper arm, and foot. None looked instantly lethal, but together they'd bleed him out in short order. Holden pulled him back down the corridor to the airlock. He pointed at the emergency locker until Naomi followed his gesture and nodded.
"Do what you can," he said, and moved back down the hallway to Cass.
When he put his hand on her back to let her know he was there, she said, "Based on volume of fire, I'd guess 10 to 12 shooters, mostly light assault rifles and sidearms, one shotgun. That corridor is a kill box. No way through that."
"Fuck,"
Holden yelled in frustration. The universe kept waiting until he was thoroughly beaten, then tossing him a nibble of hope, only to yank it away again.
"New plan?" Corin asked. "Shoot back, I guess," he said, then leaned partway around the corner and fired off 3 quick shots.
He ducked back in time to avoid a fusillade that tore up the bulkhead behind him. When the shooting slowed, Cass launched herself across the opening to the other side. A risky move, but she made it without taking a hit and started leaning out to lay down fire with her assault rifle. When they drove her back with return fire, Corin leaned around Holden and fired off a few shots. Before she could pull back out of the line of fire, a round went through the arm of her environment suit, blowing white padding and black sealing gel into the air.
"Not hit, not hit," she yelled, and Cass leaned out to fire again to keep the defenders off balance.
Holden looked back down the corridor, and Naomi was stripping Juarez out of his suit, spraying bandages on his open wounds as she went. Another wave of fire drove Cass and Corin into cover. When it let up for a second, Holden leaned out and fired a few more shots. It was what people like them did, even when there was no chance.
Chapter 51. Clarissa.
"What the hell did you do?"
Ashford shouted. His face was thick and purple. The rage pulled his lips back like a dog baring his teeth. Clarissa knew she should feel fear. Should feel something.
Instead, she shrugged the way she had when she was 14 and said it again. I opened the doors. A man appeared in the hallway for a fraction of a second, and Ashford's men opened fire, driving him back. I've got five in the corridor, one of Ashford's people said. He was looking at the security camera feed. Three women, two men. One of them's Corin. I think Jim Holden's one of them. Ashford shook his head in disgust. Why the fuck did you let them in here? He said. His tone dripped acid. I didn't kill them, Clarissa said. So you don't get to. She was in distress, Cortez said, moving himself between her and Ashford, shielding her with his body. She misunderstood something I said. It wasn't an act of malice, Captain. The girl only... Someone shoot her, Ashford said. No, Cortez cried out. He sounded like someone was about to shoot him. The guard nearest them turned. The barrel of his gun seemed suddenly enormous, but when the sound of gunfire came, it wasn't from him. A shape, maybe a woman, maybe a man, flickered at the edge of the corridor to the bridge, and the staccato sound of gunfire filled the room. Clarissa, forgotten, pushed herself back through the doorway into the security office. Cortez followed her, his hands up around his ears to block the noise or a bullet, or both. He put his hand on her shoulder as if to comfort her, but it only pushed her a little lower to the floor, him a little nearer the ceiling.
Oh, Cortez murmured. I wish you hadn't done that. I wish you hadn't done that.
Anna was still speaking on the security station monitor. Radio-free slow zone, soldiering on. There was a fresh crackle of gunfire from the bridge. Ashford shouted, Take them out! Take them all out! But as far as she could tell, the guards hadn't rushed the corridor. They didn't need to. Sooner or later, Holden and Naomi and whoever they had with them would run out of bullets, and then they'd die. Or Ashford and all his men would, and then Holden would kill them. Either way, she didn't see how it looked good for her. And that was fine. That was what she'd come here for. Except, you heard what she said? What Anna said?
Anna Volovodov is seriously mistaken about what is happening here, Cortez said. It was a mistake letting her into the project in the first place. I knew I should have asked for Mohammed Al-Mubi instead.
Did you hear what she said?
What are you talking about, child?
She said if we attack the ring, it'll take action against the people on the other side. Against everyone.
She can't know that, Cortez said. It's just the sort of thing the enemy would say to trick us.
It wasn't her, Clarissa said. Holden told her.
The same James Holden who started a war by telling people things?
Clarissa nodded. He'd started at least one war. He'd destroyed Protogen, and by doing so, set up the dominoes that would eventually topple Mao Quick and her father. He'd done all of that. But he didn't lie. All those other things he did, he never lied once. Cortez opened his mouth to reply, his face already in a sneer. Before he could, the gunfire boomed again. She could feel Cortez flinch from it. The air was filling with the smell of spent gunpowder, and the air recyclers were moving into high particulate mode. She could hear the difference in the fans. Probably no one else on the bridge would have any idea what that meant. It would just be a slightly higher whirring to them, if it was anything. Cortez ran his fingers through his hair.
Stay out of the way, he said. When it's over, when he's done this, I can speak with Ashford. Explain that you didn't mean to undermine him. It was a mistake. He'll forgive you.
Clarissa bowed her head. Her mind was a mass of confusion, and the hunger and gunfire weren't doing anything to help. Jim Holden was out there in the corridor. The man she'd come so far to disgrace and destroy. And now, she didn't want him dead. Her father was back on Earth, and she was about to save him and everyone else, or possibly destroy them all. She'd killed Ren, and there was nothing she could ever do that would make that right. Not even die for him. She had been so certain. She'd given so much of herself. She'd given everything. And in the end, all she'd felt was empty and soiled. The money and the time and all of the people she could have been if she hadn't been worshipping at the altar of her family name had already been sacrificed. Now she had offered her life, except that after speaking to Anna, she wasn't sure that wouldn't be an empty sacrifice too. Her confusion and despair were like a buzzing in her ears, and the voice that rose out of it was peculiarly her own. Contempt and rage, and the one certainty she could hold to. "Who is Ashford to forgive me for anything?" she said. Cortez blinked at her, as if seeing her for the first time. "For that matter," she said, "who the hell are you?" She turned and kicked gently for the doorframe, leaving Cortez behind. Ashford and his men were all armed, all waiting for the next round of gunfire. Ashford, stretched out behind his control panel, pistol before him, slammed his palm against the controls. "Ruiz!" he shouted. His voice was hoarse. How many hours had they been waiting for this apocalypse to come? She could hear the strain in him. "Are we ready to fire? Tell me we're ready to fire." The woman's voice came, shrill with fear. "Ready, sir. The grid is back online. The diagnostics are all green. It should work. Please don't kill me. Please." This was it, then. And with an almost physical click, she knew how to fix it. If there was time. She put her tongue to the roof of her mouth and pressed, swirling in two gentle counterclockwise circles. The extra glands in her body leapt into life as if they'd been waiting for her, and the world went white for a moment. She thought that she might have cried out in the first rush, but when she was back to herself, to better than herself, no one had reacted to her. They were all pointing their guns at the corridor, all drawn to the threat of James Holden, the way she had been herself. All except Ashford. He was letting go of his weapon, leaving the pistol to hang in the air while he keyed in the firing instructions. That was how long she had. It wasn't enough. Even high as a kite on battle drugs, she couldn't do what needed to be done before Ashford fired the laser. So, he became step one. She pulled both feet up to the doorframe and pushed out into the open air of the bridge. The air seemed viscous and thick, like water without the buoyancy. A woman ducked out of cover, firing toward Ashford, and Ashford's people returned fire, muzzles blooming flame that faded away to smoke and then bloomed again. She couldn't see the bullets, but the paths they made through the air persisted for a fraction of a second. Tunnels of nothing in nothing. She tucked her knees into her chest. She had almost reached Ashford. His finger was moving down, ready to touch the control screen, ready perhaps to fire the comm laser. She kicked out as hard as she could. The sensation of her muscles straining, ligaments and tendons pushed past their maximum working specifications, was a bright pain, but not entirely without joy. Her timing was only a little off. She didn't hit Ashford in the center of his body, but his shoulder and head. She felt the impact through her whole body, felt her jaw clicking shut from the blow. He slid back through the air, away from the control panel, his eyes growing wider. Two of the guards began to swing toward her, but she bent her body against the base of the crash couch and then unfolded, moving away. The guns flashed, one, then another, then two together, like watching lightning in a thunderstorm. Bullets flew, and she spun through the air, pulling her arms tight against her to make her spin faster, rifling herself. One of the women in the corridor leaned in, spraying gunfire through the room. A bullet caught one of the guards, and Clarissa watched as she moved toward the farthest wall. It was like seeing frames from an old movie. The woman in the corridor, the muzzle of her weapon alive with fire, then Clarissa turned. The guard, unmoved, but blood already splashing out from his neck, the little wave radiating through his skin out from the impact like the ripple of a stone dropped in a pond. Then she turned, the guard falling back, blood blooming out of him like a rose blossom. The same would happen to her, she knew. The drugs flowing through her blood, lighting her brain like a seizure, couldn't change the abilities of her flesh. She couldn't dodge a bullet if one found her. So instead, she hoped that none would, and did what needed to be done. The access panel was open, the guts of the ship exposed. She grabbed the edge of the panel gently, slowing herself. Blood welled up from her palm where the metal cut into her. She didn't feel it as pain, just a kind of warmth, a message from her body that she could ignore. The brownout buffer set behind an array control board. She slid her hand down to it, her fingers caressing the pale-formed ceramic. The fault indicator glowed green. She took a breath, gripped the buffer, pushed it down, turned, and then pulled. The unit came loose in her hand. A gun went off. A scar appeared on the wall before her, bits of metal spinning out from it. They were shooting at her, or near her. It didn't matter. She flipped the unit end for end and reseated it. The buffer's indicator blinked red for a moment, then green, just the way Ren had showed her. Terrible design, she thought with a grin, and held down the buffer's reset. Two more guns fired, the sound pushing against her eardrums like a blow. Time stuttered. She didn't know how long she'd been holding the reset, if she'd slipped it off and back on. She thought it should have gone by now, but time was so unreliable. The world stuttered again. She was crashing. The buffer's readout went red. Clarissa smiled and relaxed. She saw the cascading failure as if she were the ship itself. One bad readout, causing the next, the levels of failure rapid and incremental. The nervous system of the behemoth sensing a danger it couldn't define, doing what it could to be safe, or at least to be sure it didn't get worse. Failing closed. She turned. Ashford stood on his couch, holding the restraint straps in one hand and pressing his feet into the gel. His mouth was a square gape of rage. Two of his people had shifted to face her as well, their guns trained on her, their faces almost blank. Behind them all, far across the bridge, Cortez was framed by the security office doorway. His face was a mask of distress and surprise. He wasn't, she thought, a man who dealt well with the unexpected. Must be hard for him. She hadn't noticed before how much he looked like her own father. Something about the shape of their jaws, maybe, or in their eyes. The lights flickered. She felt her body starting to shudder. It was over. For her, for all of them. The first twitch of the collapse pulled at her back like a cramp. A rising nausea came to her. She didn't care. I did it, Ren, she thought. You showed me how, and I did it. I think I just saved everyone. We did.
Ashford caught his pistol out of the air and swung toward her. She heard his screaming like it was meat ripping. Behind him, Cortez was shouting, launching himself through the space. There was a contact taser in the old man's hand, and the grief on the old man's face was gratifying. It was good to know that on some level, he cared what happened to her. The lights flared once and went out as Ashford brought the barrel to bear on her. The emergency lighting didn't kick in. Everything was darkness. And then, for a moment, light. And then, darkness.
Chapter 52. Holden. Holden ejected his spent magazine and reached for a new one. His fingers only hit an empty space where he expected it to be. He hadn't been managing his ammo well. He'd wanted to keep at least one magazine in reserve. Corin was firing around him with her rifle. She had spare pistol ammo on her belt. Without asking, he started pulling magazines off her belt and putting them in his. She fired off a few more shots and waited for him to finish. It was that sort of fight. Cass was leaning around the corner, firing. Answering bullets hit every place on her side of the corridor except where she was. Holden was about to shout at her to get back into cover when the lights went out. It wasn't just the lights. So many things about his physical situation changed all at once that his hindbrain couldn't keep up. It told him to be nauseated, just in case he'd been poisoned. It was working with 50-million-year-old response algorithms. Holden collapsed to his knees with the nausea, the sudden appearance of gravity being one of the many changes. His knees banged against the floor until he was no longer wearing a heavy environment suit, which also meant he could smell the air. It had a vaguely swampy, sulfurous odor. His inner ear didn't report any Coriolis, so they weren't spinning. There were no engine sounds, so the behemoth wasn't under thrust. Holden fumbled at the ground around him. It felt like dirt, damp soil, small rocks, something that felt like ground cover plants.
"Oh, hey, sorry," a voice said.
Miller's. The light level came up with no visible source. Holden was kneeling naked on a wide plain of something that looked like a mix of moss and grass. It was as dark as a moonlit night, but no moons or stars shone overhead. In the distance, something like a forest was visible. Beyond that, mountains. Miller stood a few meters away, looking up at the sky, still wearing his old gray suit and goofy hat. His hands were in his pockets, his jacket rumpling around them.
"Where?" Holden started.
"This planet was in the catalog. Most Earth-like one I could find. Thought it'd be calming."
"Am I here?"
Miller laughed. Something in the timbre of his voice had changed since the last time Holden had spoken to him. He sounded serene, whole, vast.
"Kid, I'm not even here. But we needed a place to talk, and this seemed nicer than a white void. I've got processing power to spare now."
Holden stood up, embarrassed to be naked, even in a simulation, but without any way of changing it. But if this was a simulation, then that brought up other issues.
"Am I still in a gunfight?"
Miller turned, not quite facing him.
"Hmm?
I was in a gunfight before you grabbed me. If this is just a sim running in my brain, then does that mean I'm still in that gunfight? Am I floating in the air with my eyes rolled back or something?"
Miller looked chagrined.
"Maybe.
Maybe? Maybe. Look, don't worry about it. This won't take long.
Holden walked over to stand next to him, to look him in the eyes. Miller gave him his sad, basset hound smile. His eyes glowed a bright electric blue.
We did it, though? We got under the power threshold?
Did. And I talked the station into thinking you were essentially dirt and rocks.
Does that mean we saved the Earth?
Well, Miller replied with a small belter shrug of the hands, we also saved the Earth. Never was the big plan, but it's a nice bonus.
Good that you care.
Oh, Miller said with that same vaguely frightening laugh. I really don't. I mean, I remember being human. The simulation is good. But I remember caring without really caring, if you know what I mean.
Okay.
Oh, hey, look at this, Miller said, pointing at the black sky. Instantly, the sky was filled with glowing blue rings. The 1,000-plus gates of the slow zone, orbiting around them like Alex's dandelion seeds, seen from the center of the flower.
Shazam, Miller said.
As one, the gates shifted in color and became mirrors reflecting thousands of other solar systems. Holden could actually see the alien stars and the worlds whirring in orbit around them. He assumed that meant Miller was taking a little artistic license with his simulation. There was a croaking sound at his feet, and Holden looked down to see something that looked like a long-limbed frog with grayish skin and no visible eyes. Its mouth was full of sharp-looking little teeth, and Holden became very aware of his bare toes just a few dozen centimeters from it. Without looking down, Miller kicked the frog thing away with his shoe. It blurred away across the field on its two long limbs.
The gates are all open out there?
Miller gave him a quizzical look.
You know, Holden continued, in reality?
What's reality?
Miller said, looking back up at the swirling gates in the night sky.
The place where I live?
Yeah, fine. The gates are all open.
And are there invading fleets of monsters pouring through to kill us all?
Not yet, Miller said. Which is kind of interesting in its own way.
I was joking.
I wasn't, Miller said. It was a calculated risk, but it looks clear for now.
We can go through those gates, though. We can go there.
Can, Miller said. And knowing you, you will.
For a moment, Holden forgot about Ashford, the behemoth, the deaths and the violence and the 1,000 other things that had distracted him from where they really were, what they were really doing, what it all meant. He would live to see humanity spread to the stars. He and Naomi, their children, their children's children. Thousands of worlds, no procreation restrictions. A new golden age for the species. And the Nauvoo had made it happen, in a way. Fred could tell the Mormons. Maybe they'd stop suing him now.
Wow, he said.
Yeah, well, let's not get too happy, Miller said. I keep warning you. Doors and corners, kid. That's where they get you. Humans are too fucking stupid to listen. Well, you'll learn your lesson soon enough. And it's not my job to nursemaid the species through the next steps.
Holden scuffed at the ground cover with his toe. When it was scraped, a clear fluid that smelled like honey seeped out. This world was in the station's catalog, Miller had said.
I could live here someday.
The thought was astounding. The sky shifted, And now all the ships that had been trapped around the station were visible. They drifted slowly away from each other.
You let them go?
I didn't. Station's off lockdown, Miller said.